In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
And we're live. This is the Energemetra 6 podcast. I think we're on episode 6. Yeah. And we've got Mel and Third to read Ty. And that's it for today. And so real quick before we get started. The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value-for-value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you. All right. This is Bright Star by Jared Michaud. Me, Chapter 5. Take it away, Mel.
Telestry arrogance must establish the anvil upon which the galaxy is broken. The ideography's apocryphal iteration.
Cassizia City was a venerable elder settlement, perched upon the planet Ateria, the oldest of humanity's worlds in the Aurora Galaxy. In its long history, the city had seen many styles of architecture, and they layered one upon the other to create an effect that could have been haphazard. Instead, it provided a sense of permanence and solidity. Nearly 200 years before New Standard Time, Lara Formalius, first counselor of the Telestry, had bought thousands of acres of land surrounding the eastern side of Sea City. His goal was to ensure the forests around the Telestry's spires would never be overrun by the metropolis they bordered. The near rainforest still thrived under the Telestry's management, having become equal parts park and nature preserve. It was the planet's mild seasons and an even wider temperate band than Earth's that had attracted colonists after the escape over 1,000 standard years before. The buildings of the Telestry itself were a monument to Malleus' victory, soaring triumphantly over the surrounding city and forest alike, with almost impossibly dainty architecture that attested to their maker's prowess with Energemetra 6, fused into interlocking towers of stone, composite, and alloy. The trip to Ateria's Sea City from the edge of the Abyss, where Nate had left John and Rachel with the Keeper, had taken a full week, and he was chafing with impatience. It felt almost as if he had taken a wrong turn, even though he knew the choice he'd made was the only reasonable option for him. Knowing that didn't stop the feeling that there was something he needed to do, and that with every second he was missing some critical opportunity. Nate expected they would be met at the spaceport and whisked off to the Telestry in some sort of official ground transport. When Ocarist's pinnace landed, however, they debarked to a complete lack of fanfare, and Loredan immediately set off walking at a brisk pace, leading Nate out of the spaceport and into Cassizia City. They only received a few sideways glances as they took the slidewalk across the spaceport, and soon the spaceport gave way to the city proper, bustling with foot traffic while air cars moved above the rooftops, giving the entire city a background hum of rushing air. The people of Ateria wore jumpsuits, or brightly colored shirts and trousers, which made Loredan's jet-black robes stand out starkly, In the city proper, people obviously weren't accustomed to seeing Telestics out among them. And their curious, sometimes awestruck gate stares followed Loredan across the city. Loredan said little, only stopping briefly when their path was blocked by groups of pedestrians, or, as they slowly approached their destination, pilgrims come to visit the Telestry. They had been walking for over an hour, and Nate was looking aside, watching a child of 5 or 6 laugh, chasing a ball through a park beside the road, when Loredan finally spoke.
"This is a place of peace for them."
He had stopped in front of Nate, and his gaze followed the same little boy, now joined by another.
"It has been 7 generations since the Telestry was built. In that time, no war has come to this place. That one's great-grandparents fought the Dominion in space above us and lost. But the enemy never set foot on the surface."
Loredan raised his face to the sky above them, and his dark eyes were hot, his sharp features emphasized by his obvious rage.
"Even now, their station hangs in the sky, ready to drop kinetic weapons on this peaceful world should we rebel."
Loredan continued walking, forcing Nate to keep up with his long strides through the city.
"In the time since Paul Cassizia founded this settlement, 200 years is the longest peace it has known. Sea City is the oldest of our cities. It's 500 standard years older than Panoptica, the capital of the Dominion. Yet it took only 3 generations for Malleus' work to come to nothing. The Telestry has been under the Dominion's sway for more than a century. The price of our peace has been unimaginable. Every year the Dominion sends its catastans to gather our young people and test them. Eteria has always had more children born energemetrists than any other settled world in the galaxy. The most promising are taken and bound to a lifetime of service in the Dominion."
Loredan's eyes glittered, and he turned to look at Nate directly.
"Our children, the best of us, become our slave masters. They're nothing more than fuel to feed the flames of the Dominion's tyranny."
He stopped for a moment, then looked at Nate with what was almost resentment.
"For us, overuse of Energemetra 6 is death. Every time we spend our power, our lives are shortened. Their overclass forces the underclass of energemetrists to use power so heedlessly they burn out. Every one of them dies before they reach middle age, and their children are forced into the Dominion's communal education."
Again, Loredan paused, this time to admire the architecture of the Telestry and take in the forest around them.
"The Society of Telestics has existed since the time of Cassizia himself. We claim his teachings and his tenets. It took centuries before the Telestry rose the first time, under Telestic Duramen and his heirs. It took centuries more for it to fall and then rise again under Malleus, when he pushed back the Regalians. But never in our history have we been subject to such depravity as this. The murder and enslavement of our children."
Loredan shook his head.
"The Telestic Society was founded upon the tenets, handed to Paul Cassizia by the Lightmaker himself. We are the only order in history to hold energemetrists accountable for what they do to those around them. The Dominion tolerates our Telestry because we are ancient and far from strong enough to threaten their military might. They approve of our culture. They think we lend them an air of legitimacy. But they dictate to us as no other power in history ever has."
Loredan paused for a moment, his razor-sharp gaze fixed on Nate, then said,
"Tell me, Bright Star, how long must our people suffer under their lash, when we would be so much kinder masters if they were the slaves?"
Nate stood for a moment, then said thoughtfully, "The only master I could trust would be the Lightmaker himself. Men aren't intended to hold that kind of power over other men." Loredan just looked at him for a moment, obviously disgusted, and turned to resume his walk toward the telestry, now looming high above them. As they entered, Loredan looked back at Nate and said,
"Normally I would make you an honored guest of the telestry, but the people are not prepared. I would ask for your patience."
Nate frowned, apprehension rising inside him.
"What are you actually asking for?"
Loredan replied,
"I would have you attend the Telestry's Academy. Give me a month. After that, I will see that you are recognized for who you are."
He smiled almost apologetically.
"There is much to prepare."
Nate didn't answer immediately, his impatience at the situation rising up to confront him full force. If he agreed to such a delay, what would be the cost? He knew instinctively that time was of the essence. Could he afford to spend an entire month here, especially with Loredan playing games as he was so obviously doing? Nate was about to reject Loredan's offer when the clarity that he had found in his cabin on Ocarist, now faded to nothing more than a lingering sense of purpose, came upon him once more. He could see his path and his purpose clearly, knew what he had to do. But again his memory began to return, and with a flash of terror and shame, it was all gone yet again. He realized he had stopped walking, and Loredan was looking back at him, his severe eyebrows drawn down in a scowl. Nate sighed and started moving again, then nodded once, evenly. "I'll stay." When they passed through the Telestry's main gate, it shut soundlessly after them. To Nate, it felt like the universe contracting into a prison around him. Something twisted inside the fields, but it was too fast to register, except that the world was closed out by more than a simple fence. Their surroundings changed very little. The buildings outside the Telestry were styled to match those inside. There were still people walking the road. Even so, Nate shuddered as Loredan led him onward toward the central spires, which were still a surprising distance away. It took another half hour for them to walk there, with the crowd gradually increasing as they progressed. When they reached the central courtyard before the largest spire of all, Loredan turned right toward a tower that set itself apart from the rest of their surroundings by virtue of its simplicity. It was still many stories high, intertwining with its neighbors at the top in bridges and arches, but it was a stark white, with no color to adorn the outer walls, and none of the decorative whorls and projections the other spires boasted. Even the door was a translucent white, with deep inlays of more opaque white swirls. Loredan walked across the entry hall of the building until he stood in front of a strange-looking desk attended by a girl on the edge of womanhood. She bowed her head as he stopped and said,
"Telestic Loredan, how may the Aqualucum serve you?"
Loredan replied,
"Fetch the proctor. I have a student for her."
The girl bobbed her head and turned to scurry away. Loredan didn't speak, and Nate was content to admire the interior of the hall in which they stood. The walls were made of some ivory-colored composite with a curious spiral grain. The floor was polished white marble, with joints so tight there wasn't even a room for a hair to slip between them. Even inside, no decorations or color marred the white to off-white palette. Here, though, whorls of relief were worked into the ascending columns, and the walls were patterned like feathery clouds. The work was so intricate, Nate knew it could never have been done without the aid of Energemetra VI. Loredan's dark robes made a striking contrast with the brightness of their surroundings as he stared into nothing, waiting for the page to return with the proctor. For a time, Nate entertained himself by reading the tenets of the field scored into the back wall of the Aqualucum in letters as big as his hand. He had gotten to the 9th tenet. "The fields of Energemetra VI may never receive entropic transference from the physical realms." When Loredan finally spoke,
"Custom weighs heavy on this place. I would advise you, take care not to tread too heavily on their traditions. They will not appreciate it.
By the time the proctor arrived, a full 10 minutes had passed. She did not look pleased, steaming across the room toward Loredan, the page in her wake. The proctor looked older than Loredan, with all white hair tied up behind her head, and a severe expression on a heavy but not unattractive face. A curious stone that somehow reminded Nate of the Sigil of Mysteries hung from a chain around her neck. She finally stopped when she reached Loredan, staring up at him with hands on her hips.
"Well?"
she said.
"What have you brought me this time?"
She didn't even glance at Nate, her gaze fixed on Loredan's face. He smiled a tight smile and nodded to her.
"Hello, Melindra. This young man will be joining the novitiate for a time. I was hoping you could see to getting him settled."
The proctor finally deigned to look at Nate briefly, then swept her eyes back to Loredan.
"And the tests? Where does he fall?"
Loredan winced slightly, then shrugged.
"He doesn't. He won't be with you for long, I'm afraid. A month at most. I was hoping you could find space for him without taking the trouble of a full enrollment."
She snorted impressively.
"What about his robes, if he hasn't tested?"
Loredan cut her off with a shake of his head.
"Put him with the novices if you must, but testing this one is inadvisable."
The proctor turned to look Nate up and down, her face impassive.
"Come on, then,"
she said, and turned to go without another word, leaving Loredan frowning after her. Nate followed, bemused, as she headed for another translucent white door at the back of the room, while the page resumed her post behind her desk. After they had marched through that door and into the hallway beyond, the proctor began firing off questions at Nate, as quickly as he could answer them, starting with,
"What's your name?"
Nate?
"The correct form is Nate, Madam Proctor. You will address teachers and elders as such. How old are you?"
12, Madam Proctor," Nate responded, wondering after his strange history what sort of answer would be right for a question like that one.
"Is that a question or a statement? Do you know, or are you just shy?"
Without waiting for an answer, she continued.
"Do you have any friends or relatives who may wish to visit you here?"
No, ma'am." At least that one was easy, he thought. It was then that the first students passed them going the other way. They were wearing gray robes with some kind of symbol emblazoned across the front, and at his first glimpse of the lead student, Nate instinctively shrank back against the wall. The boy had the same vertical slit pupiled eyes that Stratigrave Rectus had, but he didn't even look twice at Nate as he passed. The proctor caught Nate staring and smiled proudly.
"That was the cream of our graduating crop boy. The one with the X-set eyes is Doma Asher, Nephilic Stealth. He's our most powerful graduate in 100 standard years."
"X-sect?" Nate asked.
"Yes, of course, the slit pupils. It's a sign of great power. Now have you imprinted any schemics we need to see to?"
Nate looked up at her, startled, and she snorted.
"He would have told me if you had. Can at least count on him for that."
Finally, she stopped and turned to him, her face serious.
"Are you initiated into the field?"
Nate's confusion must have shown on his face, because she sighed in exasperation.
"Are you an energemetris, boy? Can you use your power yet?"
Nate nodded mutely, and she grunted.
"Well, you'll not do that here. No unauthorized use. No use at all, except in class."
She paused and reached out to touch the wall near her, a glow surrounding her hand.
"The Aqualucum is designed to indicate unauthorized Energemetris 6 use. Do you see this?"
The wall near her began to glow red, as the glow surrounding her hand increased.
These walls will recall any use of the fields near them that is not specifically pre-authorized by the use of schemix. Those are something you'll not be here long enough to learn about. The walls are reflected on the model in my office. This will not fade until I clear it.
She frowned severely at him.
Any violation of this rule will result in immediate expulsion. Special request from Telestic Lordan notwithstanding. Some rules may be bent. This is not one. Understand?
Nate nodded, feeling a bit overwhelmed by the onslaught of words. The proctor nodded in satisfaction.
We'll put you with the initiates until I hear otherwise. You're a bit old to be a novice anyway.
Her sharp eyes fastened on the chain around his neck, and she snorted.
And no objects of power in unauthorized hands. You'll get this back when you leave.
She reached down with both hands and tried to pull the chain up around Nate's head. It resisted her efforts for a moment, then Nate reached up and took it off himself, handing it to her, its faint internal glow fading as it lost contact with his skin. The proctor looked back and forth between him and the amulet suspiciously for a moment, then put it in her pocket. That done, she eyed Nate for several seconds, her lips pursed. When Nate was beginning to wonder what was wrong, she muttered something, grabbed the stone around her neck with one hand, and reached down to grasp his shoulder with the other. Nate had an instant of confusion, then his neck, left shoulder, and arm caught fire. Nate gasped in shock, staring at his arm. It was not, in fact, a flame. It just felt like it. Nate would have howled if his shock wasn't so severe, but almost as quickly as it had come, the pain simply disappeared. Nate gasped again and stared up at the proctor. She nodded in satisfaction and released both his shoulder and her necklace.
And that takes care of the Recomacula. Glad you didn't holler. Some do.
Nate reached up with his right hand and touched his neck, and sure enough, the same slick, almost scaly texture he'd felt on Rachel's arm now covered portions of his neck and shoulder. The proctor frowned.
Curious. I've never seen that color before.
She shrugged, then turned and began walking deeper into the Aqualucum. Nate shook his head, then, with nothing else to do, started after her, rubbing his arm. The pain had faded, but now his arm and shoulder itched terribly. The proctor glanced down at him once or twice as he rubbed, then scratched at it to no avail.
I remember when I got mine. It stops itching after a few days.
A full 10 minutes of walking, down one hallway then another, brought them to a wide corridor lined with doors at near intervals on each side. The proctor walked unerringly up to one of them, pulled an antique-looking mechanical key from her pocket, and opened the door with the ease of long practice. As Nate stepped to the door to look inside, children began to stream down the hall behind them. They were dressed in robes of varying shades of gray, and Nate could immediately see that the darker the robe, the larger the symbol it carried. The proctor said,
"Take this."
She held out the key, and Nate took it as she reached out into the stream of young people heading down the hallway and grabbed a small boy by the shoulder.
Righton, take this boy with you. He's to attend your sessions.
With that, she turned and marched away, her attention already visibly shifting to her next task. Nate stared after her for a moment, feeling as if he'd been run over by the proctor's brusque energy. He shook his head, then looked at the boy she had called Righton. He looked like he was about 8 years old, with brown hair that glinted blonde in the light from overhead. He obviously hadn't begun to hit his growth spurt yet, and he was skinny, though not painfully so. His Recomacula was lighter than any other Nate had seen thus far, an iridescent gray that almost matched his eyes. The knowing smirk he was giving Nate looked somehow too old for his child's face.
"The proctor has a way with people,"
Righton said. Nate snorted and offered a half-smile and a wry nod, then raised his eyebrows questioningly.
"Have you got anything to put in there?"
Righton motioned toward the open door. Nate shook his head, and Wrighton pointed to the key in his hand.
Grab your robe and lock it up, then. We gotta go.
Okay, Wrighton, Nate said, and stepped inside to snatch the robe that had been laid across the bed, pulling it on over his head. As Nate pushed the door closed and locked it, the boy made a face.
Tyler Wrighton, it's Ty. Ionic and electricity, and hurry up.
He turned and darted off down the corridor after the receding crowd. It was a mad dash through the twists and turns of the Acralucum to get to the room that Ty led him to. Despite their rush, they were the last inside, but only by a few seconds. As Nate entered, the teacher looked up from his book and frowned.
A new student. Ah, very good. I'm Professor Argos. My specialization is pre-escape history, but this class is on modern history.
He looked mildly disgruntled at the statement, as if he wouldn't teach such a subject unless pressed.
Now then, sit, everyone.
All the others had already found a spot to sit on a thin mat on the floor. The only remaining place was next to Ty in the back of the room, so Nate hurried to sit down. He noted as he walked through the class that the other students wore the same cream-colored robe he did, with a simple circular symbol in the center of the chest.
Now then,
the teacher turned his scowl down at the book in his lap.
This will be our final day in discussing the interregnum. We already know that following the escape...
His droning tone was an echo of Nate's past that he couldn't quite put a finger on. But his attention immediately wandered away from the lesson. The symbol that graced the front of the students' robes stuck in Nate's mind. He had already recognized that as the robes grew darker, the symbol they carried became more fully filled out than their previous form. But he hadn't been able to place it. He now saw that it spread across the professor's chest as well, in its fullest form, its silver outlines contrasting against his black robes. Something niggled at the back of Nate's mind, but, as with anything else in his intractable memory, it failed to materialize no matter how he prodded at it. Somehow, Nate's feeling of dread had ratcheted up bit by bit after he'd entered the telestry, to the point that now he nearly felt sick with it. A full month. He reached back into his memories, knowing he was in the right place, looking for some kind of comfort. It was like trying to cup water in his palm. He found the assurance he needed, and he could hold it for a time, but then it would trickle away. Nate scratched at his recumacula, feeling as if the month ahead of him was impossibly long. The Energemetra 6 podcast is made possible by North Arrow Coffee. North Arrow Coffee is the pro-life coffee company where 15% of every purchase goes to support organizations like Crisis Pregnancy Centers, whose purpose is to support women in the most difficult situation of their lives. If you're interested, head over to northarrowcoffee.co and use promo code E6 to get 10% off with your order.
The advertisements featured did not necessarily represent my endorsements or views.
And that's about it for today, I think. I sure appreciate it, Mel. You did a really great job.
Likewise.
I think your expression for the proctor was just great. And
awesome.
Third, good job to you.
Very good.
And
very
thank
good.
You, everybody, for being here.
Thanks, all.
All right. We will catch you all next week.
Bye.